Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tippy Canoe and Tyler Too. I Like Ike. Bringing Back America. Hope and Change. You probably recognize all of those presidential slogans. Tyler, 1840. Eisenhower, 1951. Reagan, 1980. And Obama, 2008. And all of those also appeared on campaign posters. Well, the Library of Congress is out now with a fantastic new book highlighting this country's rich history of election posters. W. Ralph Eubanks, the publishing director at the Library of Congress, joins us now to discuss. Mr. Eubanks, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And also with us is WNYC's very own Brooke Gladstone, host of On the Media. She wrote the introduction to this, Brooke. Brooke, thank you for wandering down a whole flight of stairs to join us for this.
Thanks, Brian. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Brooke.
And listeners, once again, we posted a slideshow of some of our favorite posters from this book, 12 different slides, 12 different posters from American History's presidential election campaign. So if you want to follow along as we discuss the work or just check them out, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr Show. All right, let's jump right into one of the posters on the show. This is from 1944. Brooke, you want to describe this FDR poster for us?
It's Uncle Sam who is pointing straight at you, the viewer, but also implicitly pointing at FDR just below him, and he's saying, I want you, FDR, stay and finish the job. And this is your classic don't change horses in mid-war message that they're sending here. There's the appropriation of Uncle Sam staring very resolutely, and here it isn't just a choice. This is a patriotic duty to keep FDR in office.
And, of course, FDR was reelected for the fourth consecutive time that year in 1944 and died in office not that long afterwards. But, Ralph, how bold is this in historical terms, appropriating Uncle Sam, the image of Uncle Sam for your partisan campaign?
Well, I think it was actually a poster that was done by James Montgomery Flagg himself, who created the image of Uncle Sam. So it does seem a little bit odd that he would do that, but it's kind of in keeping. I mean, another poster that we used along with this was one that was done by Ben Shahn that I'm actually quite fond of. It's called Our Friend. So it's kind of a bookend to this one that is from the National Citizens Political Action Committee.
And go ahead.
And it was, you know, just shows this image of FDR and all of these hands of varying ethnicities that he's helped, which I think this is where it kind of echoes with that saying, stay and finish the job.
Brooke, one thing we noticed is that there's a little note at the bottom of this poster that attributes it to the Independent Voters Committee of the Arts and Sciences for Roosevelt. So for one thing, it sounds like, you know, the school of a college, the Committee of Arts and Sciences, but it's also Independent Voters Committee. So is that like the super PAC of 1944? Even back then, independent groups felt that they could be a little more out there and edgy in their advertising?
Well, I think that this was more of a grassroots period. And when you look there at Arts and Sciences and you think about the WPA and all of the depression programs launched by FDR, you could see, as Ralph said, that he had constituencies all over the place.
Next poster, all the way up to 1984. This is the Reagan-Bush reelection campaign. And this poster has it all, a waving American flag, a square-jawed Reagan and a youthful H.W. Bush, a picture of the White House, just in case you forgot who was president or where he lives, and a great slogan, bringing America back. Now, we all know about the Reagan TV ad, it's mourning in America, but clearly there's hopeful messaging throughout the campaign, right, Brooke?
You know, if you were looking at American campaigns in quick motion, you would have whiplash because it's either moving America forward or else it's taking America back. Moving America forward, bringing America back. This is clearly an intensely nostalgic campaign. I mean, this guy might as well have been in a 1950s sitcom. He's Father Knows Best. He's, you know, Dr. Welby.
He was in one or two 1950s grade B movies, if I'm not mistaken. And, Ralph, another interesting element is that this appears to be hand-drawn. Was there a point at which posters switched over to photographs? Is there a reason why a campaign in 1984 would choose a drawing over a photo?
I think they did switch to photographs, and I think they became much less effective once they did switch to photographs, because, I mean, even though you could see a real likeness of the candidate, I think the ideal campaign poster shows an idealized image of the candidate. And I think that's what Brooke was talking about, that this poster does. It presents this idealized image of Ronald Reagan and with his city on a hill in the background.
And we'll get to the Obama Hope poster in a bit, which tries to do a very similar thing in 2008. But, Brooke, you wrote in your introduction to the book that fundamentally campaign posters are about hawking images of America. It's branding us, not just the politician. Do you see that in this Reagan poster?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the representative of, he is the representative of kindness, of wisdom, of experience. There's a sense of love of country. He's smiling. The other picture of him behind the microphone showing a competence and presenting images is smiling. H.W. Bush looks absolutely ecstatic. The White House is pristine. Bringing America back is in italics. This is about love of what we wish we were, and that was embodied in Reagan, and that's what everybody votes for, is a candidate that represents us the best.
And listeners, if you're just joining us, we invite you into our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show as we're looking at a slideshow we put together of some of the presidential election campaign posters from our country's history that are collected in this new book published by the Library of Congress. Ralph Eubanks, publishing director at the Library of Congress, our guest along with WNYC's own Brooke Gladstone, host and managing editor of On the Media, who wrote the introduction to this book. So let's go on to slide number 3 and all the way back now to 1896. Ralph, this is for William McKinley. And again, we see a direct push to make him a man of the people, literally being carried on a platter above the heads of a group of workers.
Well, he is. And it's also, you know, commerce and civilization, prosperity, at home, prestige abroad. And he's on this, as you said, on this gold coin. And it's really revealing his advocacy for the gold standard as well. So there's a lot that's going on in this particular image.
Probably too much.
A little too much. I mean, you have...
You mean it's visually dense.
No, I think there's too many messages. It says sound money on this big gold coin he's standing on. The people carrying him aren't just workers. They're also Wall Street. You've got also an appeal to prestige abroad. I mean, you know, what do you want here?
I think he wants it all. And I think he wants everyone to think that he's going to give them all of the things that are here. And I think different people see different things when they look at this image. And that's kind of the whole idea, I think, behind this poster, is that if you are part of one group, you see yourself here.
And I see that platter, as I described it, is a gold coin representing the gold standard. So William McKinley and Ron Paul for the gold standard for the U.S. dollar. And in 1896, Ralph, would a poster like this appear on a wall? Would it be handed out at events? Is this a newspaper ad? What was the actual context?
I think it was actually handed out at events. A lot of one of the things you have to realize, that a lot of the campaigns, probably not until around 1900, were front porch campaigns. They weren't necessarily campaigns where the candidate traveled and made a lot of appearances. So these would have been handed out at front porch campaigns. A lot of these ended up in taverns, which was where, I mean, think about it, at this point, only men could vote. So that was a place where men would gather, and that's where they would have these posters appear.
And like a rainbow across the top of the sky, the word prosperity appears at the top of the poster in a curved arc of lettering. And then underneath it, near the picture of McKinley and the big American flag, at home. So prosperity at home, prestige abroad. Prosperity at home, prestige abroad. You think, Brooke, that could work for Mitt Romney? I think he's still looking for a slogan, as far as I could tell.
Oh, I don't know. One is as good as another. I mean, one thing about Romney, and a lot, I think that mostly slogans aren't the way these days. I mean, we did have Hope and Change, but I think that was a singular in its in its ubiquity. I don't think it's slogans these days as much.
I don't think that it is either. I think that it's much more the posters that you see today very often are branding the name of the candidate or the platform, not the platform as much as the name of the candidate, trying to embed it in the public's mind rather than getting a real message. And the poster, McKinley poster, as you said, has a lot of messages, maybe too many. But a lot of the ones you see today really don't have a message. That message is really conveyed on television and commercials.
Which brings us to the next poster in the slideshow, number 4, if you're playing along at home or in the office or on your phone. This next one we had to include because it has one big name splashed across the top, and that name is Romney. And this is, of course, a 1968 poster for George Romney, Mitt's father, who did not get the nomination. But this is very simple. It's a black and white photo of George Romney smiling and the slogan, Romney, great for 68, in black and white. Ralph, why is this included, even though he wasn't the nominee?
Well, we tried to include not just the nominees. We tried to include both the winners and losers. And I think the 68 campaign was the one where we had an embarrassment of riches. I mean, there was so much going on that year because on the Republican side, you had Romney, Nelson Rockefeller, Richard Nixon. And the Democrats had, you know, Johnson and Johnson dropping out after he loses the New Hampshire primary to McCarthy. Then you have Kennedy getting into the race. I mean, there's just so much going on that year. So that's one of the reasons we included this, because we were trying to include as many winners and losers as we could.
The photo of Romney, as I mentioned, is in black and white, but the words, Brooke, Romney, great for 68, with the Republican elephant, are in red, white, and blue. So you have, you know, the classic red, white, and blue. But then why is the photo of the candidate in black and white?
I don't know. I mean, if you took the words out and replaced it with I like Ike, 1958, it would look exactly the same. If this is anything, it's an appeal to days gone by. And yeah, also, if you compare, you know, he's got a smile not all that unlike the Reagan one we were looking at a few minutes ago. And yet in this black and white washed out image, there's no dynamism. There's no, you know, he's just as happy, but he's just not communicating. And if you compare it with, say, the Nixon posters of the same year, I mean, the contrast is just mind-blowing.
And let's do that, because the next slide in the slideshow, number 5, is a Nixon's the One poster. It's really colorful. And in looking at this, it's clear that even the Nixon posters were embracing the color scheme and psychedelia in the culture at that time.
Kind of looks like the cast of Hair if Hair were peopled entirely by, you know, 65-year-old Republicans.
Yes.
Although I can't see Everett Dirksen appearing in Hair.
Well, this Nixon poster, if you're not looking, folks, it's orange, red, and blue with all sorts of hand drawings around it. So certainly it's much less boring, and maybe George Romney came off as just too boring even for the conservative Republican electorate. But you look at this poster and you think, gee, which side of the culture wars was Richard Nixon actually on?
He was trying to work both sides of the culture wars.
Absolutely.
I guess so. So, Brooke, this is an election year, and recently on your show, you've discussed the rise of super PACs and their boatloads of undisclosed cash, micro-targeting on Facebook being done through the various campaigns, and the way that political news spreads through Twitter, all very contemporary media, which begs the question, do campaign posters like the ones in this collection still matter?
Well, I think you have to cast your mind way, way back to 4 years ago when Obama was running, and one of the most iconic posters of the century occurred then. It was produced by Shepard Fairey with a nod to graffiti, and it was really powerful, and that was all that seemed to be needed to say about Obama. He was reflecting back an America that a majority of the electorate wanted to see themselves in. And so there an image was incredibly potent. And obviously the imagery of a black president is just immense. And so it really depends what it is you're pitching. And in that case, it lent itself to a visual representation.
Brooke Gladstone.
Brilliantly.
Brooke Gladstone on The Media Host, who wrote the introduction to, and W. Ralph Eubanks from the Library of Congress, which published this new collection, Presidential Campaign Posters, 200 Years of Election Art. And, Ralph, before we go, if you flip through this book quickly and try to take stock of the evolution of the campaign poster, does any particular trend emerge? I guess if I see one thing, it's that they get simpler and bolder as time goes on.
I think they did get simpler and bolder, and as printing technology improved, you saw them get a lot more complicated. I think that's perhaps why you see so much going on in that McKinley poster. But I was actually looking at the physical poster for Abraham Lincoln's 1860 campaign, and it was a very complicated poster to put together because it wasn't easy to print. And that's what you see, is as printing technology evolved, these posters became much more complicated, and then as television came in, they just went to a red, white, and blue palette with typography.
So how does Obama follow Obama hope, especially when a lot of people feel like the hope and change was not delivered, even people who are going to vote for him again this year? Is there a poster for 2012 coming from either campaign that you can envision?
You know, I've been thinking about that, and I really can't see a poster that would come out of this. And this is where, and I would say, if any of the people from the campaigns are listening, they should be looking through this for ideas for some way to actually capture the candidate in a poster that really, I think, latches onto where the American mind is right now, which is a very tough thing to get a handle on, I have to say.
So you're exhorting the campaign staffs to come down to the Library of Congress and buy this book.
Well, I think they should come to the Library of Congress and look at our poster collection, which, you know, there are 100,000 posters here, and a lot of them from campaigns.
Brooke, same question to finish up.
Yeah, I mean, if I had an answer to that, obviously I'd be making a lot more money than I am right now. I think that the key thing is they have to really identify and solidify a single simple position, and the image will come from that.
What I don't know if the country needs more of is more puns, like the one for Dewey in 48 on the poster in this book that said, "Dewey or don't we?" Maybe that's why he lost to Truman in that last-minute shocker. All right, Presidential Campaign Posters, 200 Years of Election Art is the name of the book. Ralph Eubanks from the Library of Congress. Brooke Gladstone, who wrote the introduction to this book, from On the Media. Thank you both very much. This has been really, really fun.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks.